Hello, everybody. This is Benjamin with a beautiful episode of Special Needs with Special Circumstances. I am here with a beautiful host today for our show. And she will take this time to explain to you what it's like for her 12-year-old son to have autism, the challenges, the obstacles, the good, the bad, the indifferent. So, why don't you start off by introducing yourself?
Okay. Hi, everybody. I am Yael Reese. I am I'm married to my husband, John, for about 15 years. And we have two boys. Our oldest is 12, and he's on the autism spectrum. And then we have a younger son. He's 9, and he is neurotypical, but has his own life challenges. I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist for over 10 years, and I also work at the school district offering social-emotional support to students. My son got diagnosed when he was 2.5, officially, but I noticed something going on when he was 18 months old. He started to lose his words, and I actually had a friend who noticed that he walks on his tippy toes. Like, I did not put two and two together. And it was, actually, I have a tiny little story to tell you. I was a therapist at the time, and so he was 18 months old. I remember the day I told my husband, I think something is wrong, and it was because I was a therapist, and I had a one-time client walk into, just one time she came in, and she told me the story of my life. It was very surreal. She told me that she was telling me about her son, and he has autism, and she was struggling, and she was telling me what she noticed about her son, and as she's talking, there's so many like bells going on in my head. But as a therapist, you stay really present at the person in front of you. And it was when she left, I called my friend who lives in Canada. I've known her like since I was a teenager. And she helped me process it. And I remember going and talking to my husband and telling him. And he said, okay, we'll go to see the pediatrician. And the pediatrician said, I'm not worried yet. Let's see what happens. And this is something that is very, that doesn't happen as much now that it happened 10 years ago. But pediatricians don't do early diagnoses very well. And it's not good to wait and see. Actually, they should have referred me to early intervention, because early intervention is until, only gives you services until the child is 3 years old. So we missed a lot of time. So from 18 months, I was the only one who noticed things. And then he was in preschool, so they noticed some like behavioral stuff that they were concerned about. And I was an intern at the time, so I had a supervisor who was very kind to me. And she's the one who got me on connected to a child neuropsychologist that has a long waiting list, but that is part of the privilege that I had at the time. And that she basically moved me up the list. And I only had to wait 2 months instead of like 8 months, which is huge. And the diagnosing part was different than it is today. Again, I had privilege there. That's how they did it at the time when it was private, because it was private pay. We had to pay a lot. It was a diagnosis took over 2 months, and she saw my son at least 6 times in different environments, in a school, at home, with interacting with another child. Like, it was extensive study and assessment. And I was actually 8 months pregnant with my second child at the time, when it was in March 23rd. I remember that day, and he got diagnosed, and it was very surreal. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So knowing that you had a second child on the way. And by the way, what is your son's name?
His name is Johnny.
Johnny, okay. Knowing that you had a second child on the way, was that hard for you because you had a child diagnosed with special needs?
Yes, it was. When we got the diagnosis, we actually were told that if we're gonna have another boy, which way I didn't know the sex of the baby at the time, that the chances of him being on the autism spectrum actually increases. So it really changed the first year of Danny's life, because I was watching, and I was watching in a different angle of what is happening. I wasn't as relaxed. And I was a therapist, since this was happening to me personally, and I did interact with kids on the spectrum, it was happening personally, and it's like, if someone would have asked me what is autism, I could not explain it at the time because it was so personal to me. I remember talking to my supervisor and asking her, what part is the autism and what part is my child? Because Johnny was always so friendly, so smiley, such a happy child, and for some reason, that was a question in my head. Is that him or is that the autism? Because they told me that kids on the spectrum tend to be happy and, like, excited. And I was like, oh, so this thing I love about my child, is it part of his disorder or is it him? And you know what? It doesn't matter. I know that now. But at the time, you're so close to it. I didn't know how to process it. And there's no one who was diagnosed with autism with my family. So my family's wasn't very open to it. They actually told me they thought I was crazy and that it was in my head and that it's because I am a therapist and I'm seeing things. So it took them
did it take them to warm up to the understanding of that and to get them to see that you weren't just seeing things?
I think I say they, but I'm going to tell you, it's my parents are my source of support here. My dad was right away very loving and supporting. My mom had a hard time with it. She's very close to Johnny. She helped raise him. She's very loving. And so once I told the diagnosis, it was about like a week of like her like this. And then it was slowly. She stopped telling me I was crazy. I think it was a reaction. She started to go do deep dive. And then I slowly started inviting her to the ABA and to parent training so she can just observe. And while she had a little resistant, it was not about the diagnosis. It was about him being accepted, her fears about how the world will accept, you know, this boy that we love so dearly. So she had to go through her journey with that.
I see. You know, that is so powerful and profound. I just want to thank you for being on the show again today. We, when I started this podcast journey almost 2.5 years ago, I said, you know, this is gonna be, you know, this is gonna be kind of different. It's gonna be kind of nerve wracking because, you know, you gotta speak about these things. But I started it so that guests like you can come on and share with other people who may have kids that are on the spectrum or other diagnoses, and just know, you guys, I interview quite a few people that have different diagnoses and things of that nature. So, dive in some of the, like the, you know, what you've seen from when he was born to now. Like, how was he doing, how was he doing back then than he is now?
That's amazing. I had a mom who, I don't know if it was a mom or a provider actually, but they recommended that I would take a, do a journal so I can see, because they explained to me the changes are going to be very small and gradual over time. I never did that because I knew it was good advice, but I didn't do it. But that's the good point, is that it's gradual. And he actually wasn't verbal. And he, by that time, he was 3 when we started services, because there was waiting lists, and I just gave birth, so I gave myself like about 2 months actually until I really got on it. And but we were told right away to do early intervention, mm-hmm. is so important. And we missed early intervention, which are free services, which are so important for people to know about. So we started with ABA, speech, OT, and we were told do as much as possible before 5-8 years old. And that was kind of an alarming thing in my head. Now, I could feel it ticking. We started with a certain service, and he didn't do very well. And by not very well, because it was very confined. It was very traditional ABA. And it took us about 6 months until we shifted to somewhere else that was more like free play. But that's something that I would say I so important for parents to follow their gut and to take time to reflect, but you know your child, you know what they need. So the changes that I saw, they were gradual. He wasn't speaking. I didn't know if he would. But when we changed the therapies, we noticed that when he felt safer and when he felt comfortable, he was learning. And something I learned, that we do not learn if we're stressed. We go to this part of our brain called the amygdala, and it's our emotion brain, and we get stuck there. And when we're there, when we're stressed, we cannot access the frontal cortex where we form memories and coping skills. We can't access it. So when someone is stressed, and ABA is very on you, and it just increases stress. So and he was only able to access his coping skills when he was calmer. So this new early intervention Denver model is what really worked for him. And he started to talk with words and little sentences when he was 4. And it's been after early intervention Denver model, we had a hard time because they only do it until 5. And he had 2 programs he was in that were really stressful and traumatic. And he digressed. He his talking was less. He didn't really know how to express himself. And programs, they try to help, and they're really invested. So when things are not working, a lot of time they just start blaming the child and blaming, like, oh, it's a behavioral thing. And as parents, we try to listen to the professionals. But at some point, I had, like, a major panic. I couldn't do it anymore. And I even stopped the car, and my husband came, and we decided we have to do something different. And he was, and it was around COVID time, so it was about 8. Yeah. So it's really what I can tell you. The changes that I've seen in Johnny depends on his environment. And even if the environment, the providers, like, I mean, really, really well, they have good intentions, sometimes they're just not trained, or sometimes, like, they don't know what to do. And that's okay. And I think as providers, they're not always comfortable being like, this is the most I can do. So it's important for parents to pay attention. And if you see resistance from a provider, then it's time to start looking somewhere else. And that's okay. It's better for everybody.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Do you... did you guys ever send him to school? Like, was he in school? Did he have an IEP? Did he have a speech device that he was using?
He did not have a speech device. I think they had them, but it wasn't something that providers talked to me about. So he went to preschool, and he was in public school, and he did go through the whole IEP thing. But then we got, it depends on the teacher and how skilled they are and how comfortable they are. Like, we were there for, the first year was wonderful. And then the second year, good intentioned person, but I would constantly get like, oh, I redirected him 50 times. It's just, she didn't know what to do. And he would come home exhausted. So I knew it wasn't good. So I pulled him out. It was halfway through the year. And then we started different programs. Unfortunately, like, I did not go back to public school. I just decided I don't want to waste time. There's a lot of red tape, and I know mothers who stay, and I command them. I have a really good friend who did that. I always said, like, I can't believe how much services you got for your kid. You're, like, amazing. But, like, I was like, I'm not wasting my time. I'm going to pay. So I basically, we changed our lifestyle.
Okay.
So we can pay.
I mean, and that, and I'm sure that had to come with its own set of challenges, because you had to find out what was going to work for him and,
right.
And all of that. So
let's yeah, see. We're not wealthy people. Like, both of us, like, my husband, we like, work for the school district. So it's like, it was a lifestyle change, like, very, like, we're gonna, like, live really frugally, and, like,
yeah,
person thought we were insane, like, how much we're spending on services, but it was the right thing to do for us.
And it's got him where he is today.
Yeah, I agree.
And I commend the both of you, because when parents have kids who have any type of disabilities, they don't know what to do, they don't know how to react, it's very hard for them in the first stages, and it takes them a while to get it down. I mean, you don't get a manual for this stuff, so it's kind of like you having to figure out all this stuff. Why is all this different things going on all at once?
Right. Yes.
But so how would you say that he's doing today? Does he have like friends that he?
So about a year ago, a year and some change, we found the right school. And everything changed for us. He was going through really traumatic things, and since he didn't have words, we didn't know. And of course, the school blames the child. So, it was very, very challenging. Very, very stressful. But I remember when we found the right school, they gave us about 2 weeks for him to see if this is really a right fit for him. And I was really waiting for that meeting because I was used to rejection. A lot of places wouldn't want him there either. And you get scared. I would like really like pray and be like, hey, make this work. But then I realized that at some point, something was like, I have to let it go. I can't ask for something to work if it's not going to work. I have to just, like roll with it and just pay attention. And this place, I will never forget, after, during those 2 weeks, Johnny started to talk more. And he actually said to me randomly, like, I feel safe. I will never forget that. And he said that about the ABA provider that was allowed to come to his school and be with him. And then I had that meeting, and it changed my life because I was really nervous. But the lady who runs the school, amazing lady, she told me, "Your son has a superpower." And I was like, no one ever talked to me that way before. And she said to me, "His imagination, I've never met someone like that." And for all the kids, the typical kids even in our school. And he's engaging, and we love having him here. And I will never forget leaving that place. I ran to Johnny and drove home, and I hugged him so tight. And this hug felt different. It felt like we fit. And I remember saying, and I don't know if I said it to him, but I know I said it to myself, "We found a place. You know, we found a place that respects you, a place that you belong, and who appreciates you." And since then, it changed our lifestyle. Because we're not stressed anymore. Like, we can talk about other things, and we can have interest. And it allowed us to, he does have friends, because the space, it allows to have neurotypical kids and neurodiverse kids in the same class. And the kids grow together. So they're all so very kind, because they actually are required to do group projects together. And they have to figure out how to include everyone and identify everyone's strengths. And even if, like, all I can do is keep time, but that, hey, you're going to be part of the group. And I watch him, I take him there, and they greet him. And even though he doesn't always talk and say something back, they don't give up on him. They always include him. Since then, I'm also allowed myself to remember to not put, I don't know how to say this, but it reminded me to keep on thinking without limitations. So
So
since then, I've allowed more things to come to his orbit. There's social groups that has really helped him mature. He is happy, he's excited, and he's still learning how to connect with people and to have conversations. But he's in an environment that is caring, so he is opening himself up. So yes, there's so much potential out there, and he has dreams. He tells me he wants to write movies. He wants to wants to have a family. He's always told me that he wants to be a dad, and he constantly asks me about his future kids, and I always tell him, "I don't know, but I can't wait to find out." And he's like, "How are we going to make movies?" I said, "We're going to figure it out." And we do, we figure it step by step. My husband trying to teach him about editing. He does naturally like filming things. He'll do a background, he'll draw a background with it, and then with his Lego pieces do create a creation. And that's something that is so important that I've learned, is not to put limitations on anything. When I was growing up, a lot of limitations were put on me, part of being a woman. So I realized, I learned from that, like, I'm not going to be the one who tells my child no. We're gonna figure it out together.
You know, I love that for you and for him. And I again, this has been very, you know, this has been a very beautiful story for me today. You know, if you had a few things for parents out there who may be dealing with newly diagnosed children, or going through the obstacles and the struggles that you had to go through, what would you tell them? Like, how would you tell them to deal with these things when they arise? Because we know that trying to get services in Las Vegas is nearly impossible.
I would tell them. I would tell them to always find a way to breathe. So that's something, like, when we just get so stressed, and I forget to breathe. So with everything, I finally figured out, like, the definition of brave, and it came from a doctor I shadowed and she would just tell her patients, your only job is to breathe and breathe and that's move forward, right? So, and I think that's what it is. It's like, you just have to remember to breathe and allow, remember you're human, like you're a parent, but you have to keep on breathing and you have to find a way to ground yourself, because otherwise you're floating and you can't make decisions. So breathe, exhale, and remember that all the providers out there, they know a lot of stuff, but there's something you do that no one else can, and it's to love your child. And part of loving your child, I'll define it, it's like being the one who asks them, how are you feeling? What do you need? If they don't know, that's okay. You just keep on asking in a different way. You got to be the one who listens. And yes, you become the advocate of their voice, but you also need to, at some points, be like, am I advocating my words or am I advocating their words? So just remember to love your kid and always, like, know, like, you're the one who sees them. And part of seeing them is that they're changing. So constantly touch base with them. When it comes to making decisions out there, it's just part of the breathing is keep on going. Like, it's okay to take a break, but don't let yourself off the hook. And even if you find a provider, don't get too comfortable. Yes, it feels awesome. I let myself get comfortable for a few weeks to a few months, but like, I keep on looking and I keep on checking in because everything is shifting and changing. Remember, you're human. Take care of your needs so you can be there for your kid.
Well, that is wonderful. And you know, I was thinking, you know, when I was getting ready to do this interview today, I was like, because I haven't did an interview for a long time, so this is, for me, this is kind of a bittersweet moment. And as you guys know, the host of this podcast, I have cerebral palsy. I was born with it. I've had it for 36 years. There's hard times to, you know, to navigate with it. And some days are better than others. And you know, sometimes I find myself like, just like, I don't want to do this today. You know, it's hard, it's difficult, and sometimes it's hard to really pull myself out of that. But this is the whole reason why I started doing this podcast, so that you can hear stories like you're hearing today, and that you can experience other people's stories. And like I said, if you have any other people that you can, you know, send my way, please do, because we're just going to keep doing this until, like, the wheels fall off, basically.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. I mean, I've enjoyed hearing your story, and I'm sure my listeners is going to enjoy it. I always tell you guys, please, when you listen to these things, make sure that you, they're very, you know, deep-rooted hearted. It's meant to pull at your heartstrings. It's meant to make you remember how children and adults function in a world every day where they have to, you know, deal with, you know, judgments and just a lot of different things, and it can be very hard and very challenging for them. So, you know, always remember to be kind, because you never know what someone may be going through. You never know what someone may be facing on a daily basis. And
May I say something? Is that okay?
Yes, please.
You just reminded me something, and I think it's the most important thing. So I have to say it for parents.
Please do.
I'll keep it short, but self-forgiveness. Oh my gosh, it's the number one thing I lacked through this journey, and I only discovered it about 2 years ago, and it changed my world. because you're going to make mistakes. When your child gets diagnosed, you realize, oh my gosh, I'm going to make decisions that he has to live through. Like, he's going to be doing the work. And sometimes you might choose the wrong program with the wrong provider. And you'll, like, beat up yourself because you're like, oh my gosh, my child got hurt. It's going to take time. It's okay to feel the feelings and be angry and sad. But at some point, you got to allow yourself to forgive yourself and remember you had good intentions. Like, everything you do for your child comes from good intentions, and sometimes you just don't know. And I found it really helpful. I call it healing moments, where you even yell or you're sad, just go after you take a breath and just go and apologize. Have that wrap-up healing moment for you and your child. It's good for you. It's good for your soul. And it reminds them that you're a human.
Oh, that was beautiful. I love that. Love that statement right there. And, you know, you guys will... all these episodes are available on Apple and Spotify and 6 other platforms. You're more than welcome to access it. And I will give you the opportunity to access it and listen to the episode. And I'm going to put music behind it, you guys. So get ready for that. but now, as we... you know, as we come to a close, I just want to thank my beautiful guests for coming on today. And if there is any questions, and oh, remember, guys, there's Collaboration Foundation is out there as well. It's a beautiful campus. If you guys never have checked it out, please Google them. They have a lot of different events going on. For children and adults with disabilities, and you know, you just gotta find out what works. But the thing is, you can't give up. You gotta keep fighting and make sure you give yourself patience and grace and why going through all this stuff, because it is hard. We sometimes can get to that place where, you know, we just get exhausted and we get tired and we're like, you know, why isn't anything working? Well, eventually something will work. You just got to find out what that is.
True. Keep on going.
Well, you guys, we will reconvene soon. And it's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you all today and have our guests on the show today. I'm gonna have her back on for a part 2, so we're definitely gonna make that happen. I think we need to definitely bring her back for a part 2. would you be open to that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So definitely, I like to bring people back for an update and see where things are and how, what the resources they have and how things are going. So I think this is going to be one for the ages. And like I said, we're just going to keep on doing this. If you guys have any other people out there to send my way, please email me. My email is mrbenjaminray87@gmail.com. You can also reach out to me by phone as well, and I'm just going to be looking for the next person to interview. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we have somebody new on the show, because I need to keep doing this. I used to do it daily, 5 days a week, and then, you know, work happened and other things happened, and I kind of got away from it, but it was nice to get back into it and jump back into it, and we're going to be doing it again in a couple weeks or so. So definitely we're going to bring her back on, and we'll talk about the next time she'll be on the show to give us an update on where Johnny is and how he's doing and how things are going. So that's awesome. That's it for now, guys. We will see you later.
Bye.